Mini-episode 794 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 794. This is FDH Management Partner Rick Morris. We've got a great segment coming up for you today. Longtime friend of the show, Fran Stuckberry, noted football analyst at all levels here, somebody who's been covering football for any number of publications over the years and websites such as Our Sports Central, a guy who, it's safe to say, watches more football at more levels than anybody else I know. Over the last two seasons, we've been drilling down specifically with him a lot on college football because it is a vast, vast landscape out there. And as I said, nobody follows football at any level really deeper than he does. So we've got the bowl season upon us here. We are coming up on the New Year's Six bowl games and specifically the semifinals for the college football playoff coming up this weekend. So good friend, Fran Stuckberry, proud to have him back on the show. Fran, happy holidays, my friend. Happy New Year. Glad to have you back on and talk football with you today.
Thanks, Rick. Happy to be a guest on your show.
In terms of where we start here, I think we should probably take a look at, again, this is a very busy time of year for planning for next year for any number of schools, because some of them, whether by their own choice or by choices foisted upon them by others, are having to look in new directions for head coaches for next year. So you have a couple of things, like one of the hot coaches out there on the market this year, Jeff Brohm, ending up at Purdue. Tom Herman getting plucked away to Texas, who gets replaced by Major Applewhite. He gets the promotion there. Lane Kiffin down to, I believe it's the Florida chapter of ITT Technical Institute or some other school down there. Brian Kelly staying put at Notre Dame after one of the worst years they've had probably in recent decades. So take this any direction you want to here. What are some of the real things that jumped out at you as far as this year's silly season with the coaches?
Well, coaches have moved all over the place. I was kind of surprised to see LSU keep the interim coach, Ed Orgeron. But the thing is, they got themselves an offensive coordinator in Canada from Pittsburgh who runs a high-power offense. I'm like, I was surprised the guy kept his job, but you know, but thank God he's not running that pitiful LSU offense.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised about that as well. And they were making noise about being in the Tom Herman sweepstakes, but, of course, that ended up going the other way. And of course, I can't mention Tom Herman on this show with you without fingering that a year ago you predicted before the season that Houston was going to be the big surprise of the non-power conference teams. You were right. They go to a major bowl game last year. And this leads to Tom Herman's elevation into one of the premier jobs in America, and something that really promises to be potentially a game changer for the upper echelon of college football, because you look at what he did in Houston, which a lot of people consider to be the number one market for college football recruiting. If he can just basically transfer a lot of that recruiting ability up the road to Texas, and they're never really hurting for players anyway. So it wasn't really Charlie Strong's failure as a recruiter that got him. It was coaching a lot of the players there. So the combination of Herman's coaching and recruiting should have everybody terrified, I would think.
Well, the thing is, Tom Herman, if Houston did get put in the Big 12 like they thought they would, he probably would have stayed at Houston, because it would have made no sense for him to go to Texas if Houston was put in the Big 12 like they were leading them on, walking them down the aisle, then they left them at the altar, pretty much.
Exactly. That was something that was kind of unexpected. We were hearing a lot about potential Big 12 expansion, but it ended up really not happening. I know as far as the rest of the bowl season goes, something you had mentioned to me off air was that one of the themes that we've seen to this point in time here towards the end of the 2016 calendar year, the bowl season, of course, continuing on into early 2017. But I know one of the themes that you had mentioned to me so far was expecting the unexpected from a lot of the bowl games we've seen thus far. And on its face, I'd have to agree with you. I'm interested in hearing your specific examples.
Well, one specific example is the famous Idaho Potato Bowl. Idaho was a 16-point underdog, and they won 61-50. This is a team that's going down to FCS in 2018. They wanted to show that they're, you know, they can play in this level and they shouldn't be put down there. It even got to the point where the quarterback attacked the athletic director for moving them down.
Yeah, that was very surprising as well, because again, you see some of these underdogs really kind of rising up in these bowl games here. And I was very surprised as well to see Baylor come out with the effort that they did with a lame duck coach against Boise State, who generally shows up pretty well this time of year. But it almost looked like it was Boise that had the letdown.
Well, Boise had tons of turnovers. They had tons of mistakes, and apparently they did not want to play in the game. Baylor lost six straight, and they showed people they wanted to be part of this bowl game. They wanted to give their coach a final farewell.
Well, I'm a big Jim Grobe guy. He did a lot at my alma mater, Ohio U, back in the day, and really helped kind of turn them around even prior to Frank Solich getting there. We had a bad stretch in between, of course, but I have a lot of fondness for Jim Grobe, and he deserved to go out on a good note. I was just a little bit surprised to see that. But were there any other big surprises that really kind of jumped out at you so far?
Well, one thing in the Quick Lane Bowl, I mean, Rick, on paper, that was supposed to be one of the most boring matchups, one of the worst. With Boston College and Maryland, it was a shootout at 36-30, which kind of surprised me, because both teams never score, and they were explosive in that game.
Yeah, I didn't expect that as well. I like you, and like a lot of people, really thought it was going to be more of a ho-hum kind of affair, but it really ended up being a little bit more compelling than that. We go into the major bowl games now. Used to be called the BCS Bowls, now being called the New Year's Six. And a little bit of controversy, as there always is, in terms of who makes it and who doesn't. I think in the Capital One Orange Bowl, there is a good sense that these two teams were going to be there. A little bit of a question as to who was going to come out of the ACC, perhaps. But Louisville struggles down the stretch, took them out of it. 10-2 Michigan against 9-3 Florida State, kind of a marquee coaching matchup there. Jim Harbaugh against somebody who's won a national championship in Jimbo Fisher. What do you look for in that one?
I think Michigan's going to win that game. You give them time to prepare. Their defense is really good. And I know you're playing in Florida's background, Florida State's background, but I think Michigan has more to prove this year. They want to show people that they belong in the playoff, and they feel like they got robbed against Ohio State with some bad calls. But I like Michigan to come on top in that game.
Yeah, you always wonder how the motivation's going to go when a team's coming off a tough loss, but I would kind of agree with you that it probably won't manifest itself in terms of a letdown. Florida State should probably be so lucky as to hope for that. One of only two teams that are undefeated in the New Year's Six this year, but a team that, of course, never really had a serious chance of cracking the college football playoff, 13-0 Western Michigan, which I believe it would not make me too much of a homer to note that they were very lucky to get by my Ohio Bobcats in the MAC championship game. We gave them a lot more of a battle, clearly, than they were expecting. Maybe they were looking ahead. They're going up against 10-3 Wisconsin, who, winners of the Big Ten Western Division, and a team that, again, couldn't get it done against Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State. A strong season other than that, for whatever it's worth, and they seem to be regarded as a fairly significant favorite in the Goodyear Cotton Bowl Classic. What are you looking for in this one here? Do you think WMU can kind of shake off the hangover of what happened in the last game and give Wisconsin something of a surprise?
Well, the question is if Wisconsin is motivated. If Western Michigan jumped out to a big lead, like 21-0, the game's going to be over pretty much, because, you know, I mean, Wisconsin's not going to care. It kind of depends on if Wisconsin really wants to show people that, you know, they have an unstoppable running back who runs all over everybody, you know. You have to wonder how motivated Wisconsin is. Western Michigan wants to show people, you know, they want to finish out the season undefeated. They want to show people that they belong on the table, like Houston did last season against Florida State.
I agree with you completely, because I think motivation is the biggest edge by far that Western Michigan has. Because in the case of Wisconsin, again, they lost to the three marquee programs in the Big Ten Eastern Division. They don't really gain much by winning this game here. It doesn't sort of wipe out the stench of how they showed up in those other three games. So I would tend to agree with you on that. We look at the Rose Bowl presented by Northwestern, 11-2 Penn State versus 9-3 USC, a battle of traditional powers in the most traditional bowl game of them all. For Penn State, it is their consolation prize, as it were. We never used to think of it back in the day as that ever being the case for a Big Ten team, but Penn State had their eye on a college football playoff spot. I thought, and again, not me being an Ohio State homer, I thought the committee made the right pick, because you just look through the course of the season here at the resumes of the two teams, I thought the committee went the right way. I think this is probably an appropriate matchup for this game. USC getting in there, some people thought that it could potentially have gone another way. This could potentially have been a game to go to Colorado, but as traditional a matchup as it gets as far as great powers in a very traditional game, Monday should be very, very interesting to see how this one plays out. What are you looking for?
Well, it's going to be an interesting game, because, Rick, back in September, both coaches were on the hot seat about possibly both getting fired or losing their jobs at Elm when they were losing those early season games. Both coaches were supposed to be out of there, and they both rallied. USC had huge wins, and Penn State, you know, rallied and won the Big Ten championship.
That is an excellent point. That really is true. Yeah, if we go back a couple of months, you really wouldn't have believed that these two teams would have been here in this spot, and Penn State especially coming in as they are as Big Ten champions for this season, albeit making it in on that tiebreaker over Ohio State, which, again, the bowl committee, subsequently the College Football Playoff Committee, slotted them in the Rose Bowl instead of in the semifinals. We go next to the All-State Sugar Bowl, which pretty much mandates at this point that we're looking at a Big 12 versus SEC matchup, 10-2 Oklahoma, 8-4 Auburn. This is one of these things you would almost never, ever, ever say this about the SEC, but a real struggle to pick out who would have been the deserving franchise coming out of the SEC in a year like this. So Auburn ends up getting the nod from the committee. You could have looked in a couple other different directions. Florida getting beaten half to death in the SEC championship game probably took them out of the mix. You could have looked in the direction of Texas A&M potentially. Auburn basically ends up there over perhaps a more deserving Colorado team or somebody else, were it not for the fact that it has to be an SEC representative in this game. So what are you looking for with these teams matching up in the Sugar Bowl, which will be the last of the college football – or I'm sorry, the New Year's Six bowl games to be played on Monday night?
Well, Rick, I like Oklahoma. The SEC, besides Alabama, there has been – there really aren't – the rest of the teams are below, way below Alabama. Every other team has at least four losses in the SEC. It hasn't been a good season. Besides Alabama going undefeated, the rest of the teams are just keep on losing and losing and losing. It's almost like nobody wanted to play in the Sugar Bowl. Tennessee had a chance, and they lost. LSU had a chance, and they lost. Nobody seemed like nobody wanted to be in this game. Bob Stoops, you know, he owns the SEC. Wait, he remember a couple years ago when they beat Alabama in the Sugar Bowl?
That's a great point. And, again, it's just sort of happenstance for Auburn that they end up there in this game. They get picked by the committee because, again, it had to be somebody, and it ends up being a situation where what has been a very disappointing year at Auburn, a disillusioning year, they still end up with a major bowl spot because, again, somebody had to be there, and it ends up being them. The two games that are going to fill the semifinals this year, you look at, first of all, the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, Saturday afternoon, 3:00 Eastern time, 12-1 Washington versus 13-0 Alabama. You've got Bama hovering right about in the ballpark of about a 2-touchdown favorite at this point with this defense that a lot of people are wondering, is this the best unit we've seen yet from Nick Saban's team? But it's weird. I've got this sense about Washington. And again, at the beginning of the year, I picked a couple of sleepers to make it into the playoff. I didn't get any of the teams right, but I said Michigan and Tennessee. I ended up being wrong on both of those, not wrong by much on Michigan. But Washington ends up being that sleeper team that takes the big step forward this year. I've just got this weird sense that they can cover the game. And that I'm not going to say that they can win, because I don't really necessarily believe that, but I think it may be a better game than some people are thinking. Do you think I'm wrong about that, Fran?
Well, I think it might be a little bit closer than people think. 14 points is a high spread. And also, this kind of reminds me of the Fiesta Bowl matchup with Boise State and Oklahoma when Pearson was the coach there, and they beat them in that thrilling double overtime game a little bit.
That's a great point. That's the common denominator, because He's been there in this spot before. If Washington is to get the job done against Alabama, what do you see being the scenario? I would think the turnovers would probably be first and foremost, not that Alabama is necessarily prone to them, but if you're looking for the unusual, I suppose, and what would be an unusual outcome, that would be kind of the first thing. But if you're sitting there trying to devise a scenario where Washington can not just cover but win the game, what jumps to your mind?
Well, they're going to have to have a ball control offense. They're going to have to keep Alabama's offense off the field. They can't make mistakes. If they get behind, they may just be dead in the water. Like Alabama punches you in the face and they just run away with these games against some of these other SEC teams they beat in the season.
Well, that was the outcome actually last year in the Cotton Bowl Classic when that ended up being the nightcap. So methinks that in terms of trying to flip it around for ratings purposes this year and putting that one on early, that game was so bad in the ratings that it almost single-handedly, I think, caused the committee to move off of their stance of always keeping the games on New Year's Eve. And, of course, it's still on New Year's Eve this year, albeit a little bit earlier in the day because it's Saturday. But that Alabama game made history last year, you could almost say, because it was such a blowout. I don't think we'll be seeing the same thing in this year's nightcap. We've got the 12-1 Clemson Tigers against 11-1 Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl. Ohio State becomes the first at-large team, if you will, to make the college football playoff. Not the Big Ten champions, but they are the Big Ten representative in the Final Four this year. Again, as much as I would like to say otherwise, as much as I would like to go along with the local consensus where I live, that you give Urban Meyer this much time and it's going to cure any ill, I look at what looks to be a massive imbalance at the quarterback position. And again, in the Buckeye State, we tend to wear rose-colored glasses about JT Barrett, but his regression in the last 3 years has been very, very alarming. And the Michigan game, I think, did a lot to point that out this year. Versus the other side of the field, Deshaun Watson, a lot of people have been picking him apart this year. A disappointing year, at least statistically relative to a year before. But again, I think it's a massive imbalance of quarterback. To me, that will probably be the determinant in the game. I've got Clemson coming out. How do you see this one playing out?
Well, I also have Clemson in this game. I'm not convinced JT Barrett can make the big plays to lead Ohio State to victory because he makes too many mistakes. He throws the ball over or he throws interceptions. Clemson, you know, is superior at the quarterback position. I mean, the thing is, I really don't want to see a rematch in the championship, but that's why I think it's going to happen.
I would tend to agree with that. That's how I kind of see it going right now. And I'm very interested as a Browns fan. They are back in the pole position for the number one pick, and notwithstanding how many starters Pittsburgh's going to be sitting this week, I don't see any way the Browns are going to get by in that spot there. To me, Deshaun Watson is still a very viable guy to go number one overall, and perhaps what happens Saturday night and potentially in the national championship game will influence that. What are your thoughts about Deshaun Watson relative to a year ago?
Well, I think he's better this year than he was last year. I mean, he's been more clutch lately. I mean, he's led his team to, you know, the playoff 2 years in a row. I mean, not many quarterbacks are able to do that.
I agree with that as well. I think that, again, him becoming more of a pocket passer this year actually signals a step up rather than a step backwards. So I agree with you, even if you and I tend to be somewhat in the minority on that. So if we're looking at on January 9th in Tampa, a rematch potentially of the national championship game that we saw this past year, how do you see it playing out? Most people would figure going in, well, Alabama dispatched them a year ago. The gap between the two teams may perhaps even be bigger this year. Clemson, again, they've won the games during the season, all except one, of course, but been fairly unspectacular in doing so. Is there anything you've seen from this Clemson team this year that leads you to believe that it could be a different outcome if they match up against Alabama again?
I mean, I'm not really sure, Rick, because living in Raleigh, I watched the NC State Clemson game, and if NC State had a kicker, they would have lost that game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the thing is,
I'm just not so.
I mean, Clemson. I mean, they've been good this year, but they haven't been. They weren't. They were more dominant last year than they were this year. Clemson got lucky in a couple of games. I mean, we could have had the term Clemsoning again if they lost the ACC championship. That didn't happen.
That's right. But is it a matter of them just being underwhelming in certain spots, but still having another gear in terms of We haven't necessarily seen the best from them yet, and that's the scenario where they could perhaps win the national championship, is if they come out. And, well, I guess in the one sense, obviously it's going to take their best game of the year to beat Alabama, but what percentage chance do you think, it's a good chance or a slim chance that that's the scenario, versus they're just not as good as last year and may not have enough left in the tank to beat Alabama?
I mean, I think it's a slim chance, but also we have to keep in mind with Alabama, their offensive coordinator left for Florida Atlantic, Lane Kiffin. So we don't know if that's going to be a distraction to the team. I know Steve Sarkisian is taking over calling the new offensive coordinator. We don't know if that's going to be a – and then again, in the past with Alabama coaches, like last season when their coach went to Georgia, that hasn't been a distraction. So I don't think it will be this year, but it's something to keep an eye on.
That's a good point. You've got what you would think would be a fairly smooth thing there, Kiffin and Sarkisian actually being friends, people on the same wavelength. It's probably not going to be much of a difference philosophically from one coach to the next, but that is worth keeping an eye out on. So we have that to look forward to, that matchup potentially in the national championship game on Monday, January 9th, to cap off what has been, as always, a very interesting bowl season. Fran, any closing thoughts here? Anything we didn't get to specifically that you think is worth mentioning?
Well, it was a fun bowl season. Like another thing we can talk about is that is a Holiday Bowl with Minnesota and Washington State. Minnesota had 7 players suspended, and they surprisingly beat Washington State. That kind of surprised me in that game.
Yeah, that's a big black eye for Mike Leach, definitely. I was looking at that just really, really shaking my head. I don't know how you come out and not just drill a Minnesota team. We talk about motivation for being in a bowl game, Fran, and how questionable it sometimes is. This is a team that at one point voted not to even go to the bowl game and seemed to basically buckle under pressure, like, okay, we'll go, and then they end up winning the game. You got to wonder to what extent that's going to be a lasting black mark on Mike Leach as he tries to move that program forward in the very difficult Pac-12 North.
I mean, their quarterback has come back for a following season, but I just don't – I mean, there'll be a team that can win 8 or 9 games, but I don't see them getting to the Pac-12 championship anytime soon. They just don't have the talent, and they lose games that they're not supposed to lose. So they lost to Eastern Washington this season again. I mean, they lose the teams that they're not supposed to lose to. But another thing I want to mention is briefly San Diego State's win over Houston. Danelle Pumphrey, I mean, he became the NCAA's all-time leading rusher with over 5,000 yards rushing. That guy definitely has potential to be a third down back or a Sproles type of running back in the NFL.
Very much so. And again, I remember you called it during our preseason college football roundup here that San Diego State was going to be a landmark program coming out of the non-power conferences this year. And they were a good chunk of the way. They were a contender a good chunk of the way for that at-large spot in one of the big bowls that ultimately went to Western Michigan. So as always, you were right on the money with that, as you always are with your analysis. And Fran, as I say, a pleasure always getting to break this down with you. I look forward to talking football again with you here in the near future. Thank you so much, and have a happy new year, my friend.
Thanks, Greg. Happy new year.
Thank you very much, Fran. The great Fran Stuckberry, everybody. Outstanding college football analyst. Grateful to be able to get him on the program today for FDH Lounge mini episode number 794. And thank you all, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode number 794.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.